This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Kevin DeSanto, who is managing partner of Kips DeSanto. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Let's get a little background on you before we go anywhere, please.
My background is in investment banking, working with government and technology companies in advising them on M&A transactions, raising outside capital, and general strategic consulting. I had spent the early part of my career working with Houlihan Lokey, which is a large middle market bank based out of Los Angeles. And in 2007, with a partner, started Kips DeSanto to really hone our focus on working with lower middle market companies in that government and technology space, and really helping them achieve their strategic objectives as management teams and shareholders.
So you're coming into your fifth year.
We are coming into our fifth year, and very excited about where we sit today, and a lot of changes in the marketplace that we see as creating opportunity for us as a firm.
We're going to go there. Is that all that Kips, you covered what you do, you cover what Kips do as well?
Yeah, again, a very focused firm that's based in Tyson's Corner here in Virginia. The focus is on providing transaction advisory services. We do not stray from that. We do not stray from the industry focus of government and technology, and really try to be as educated an advisor as possible, given, again, some of the challenges in the marketplace and some of the things that our clients are going through to build value in their businesses.
Exclusively in the government contracting.
That's correct.
Cool. I like companies that focus. I've done it for a little while myself. So let's WashTec, as you know, because you're usually quoted in it, you or your partner. WashTec does its annual top mergers and acquisitions, but they're going on all the time. So give me an overview of the last year or so in the market for this, just general terms, and we'll talk some specifics.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit and focus this in on the government contracting side. What we've seen over the course of the last 5 or 6 years is really a lot of changes in the marketplace, but very consistent M&A activity. And this industry is one that is an engine for acquisitions, given the innovation and customer relationships that smaller companies are able to develop in this market. And so the larger organizations are always looking for ways to enhance their competitive positioning. And they can do that through acquisitions, given the significant cash flow generation that is typical of a larger government contracting organization. So firms like SAIC or CACI or Lockheed Martin end up being very, very substantial cash flow generating businesses, which allows them to go out and try to find ways to enhance their overall organic growth rates. And a big part of how they do that is through M&A activity. And I mentioned kind of the last 5 to 6 years, really, because with the changes from a macroeconomic standpoint in 2007 and 2008, with the most recent and kind of current cycle of budget issues that the federal government has faced, this has been anything but a normal market over that period of time. Yet, the M&A activity has continued at a very robust pace. Over that last 5 to 6 years, there's been an average of 90 transactions each year in the government contracting M&A space. and the quality and positioning of those companies continues to improve and is something that has yielded a very healthy market despite some of those bigger macro or more broad economic trends that are that we're faced with today.
Okay, let's talk about a few in particular then. Before we went on here, we were talking about URS acquiring Aptus.
Yeah, that, that was an interesting transaction, primarily because of who the buyer was. To see a large engineering and construction business like URS that came in and wanted to really enhance their IT capabilities with respect to serving their federal government customers. We've seen a few of those transactions occur each year. This was obviously a relatively sizable and well-known company in this geography in Aptus.
PlanetGov.
It goes back many generations.
Right. And it emerged from those ashes.
That's correct.
To become a significant player.
Yeah, and really had a very strong position with some customers like DISA. So that was an interesting one because of who the buyer was. Seeing these non-traditional folks come into the space at a time when there is some uncertainty really is a good example of what people value and why they believe that this federal contracting market is something that you can make a good living off of, even if there are challenges. And for somebody like URS to be able to take their broader capabilities and add an IT component to it is a pretty important evolution. Things like information assurance and security and the ability to manage projects effectively through an IT infrastructure are critical to success, even if it's the most mundane or non-technical type of work that's being done. Every contractor has to be in a position to provide that capability to their customers. So really an interesting trend to watch with more non-traditional folks coming into the space.
Well, the thing that caught me off guard about the URS part, it didn't really surprise me necessarily that Aptus got bought because they do some great stuff. But URS is in construction,
right.
Basically.
Right.
And it really seemed to me out of left field and totally out of the sweet spot.
Well, I guess if you looked at what they do from a construction standpoint or an engineering standpoint, the federal government ends up being a very sizable customer for them.
Oh, yeah.
And so
they spend
the natural
more on construction than they do on IT.
That's right. So the natural migration is to be able to provide an additional capability to your customer set and find ways to really grow those relationships. And again, in a more difficult budget environment, finding every way to pull dollars out, contracting dollars out of your existing customers is really the best and kind of cheapest way to go about building organic growth.
I didn't think of it this way, and I haven't looked into it, but I wonder if URS does anything with SCIFs in there.
I don't know the answer explicitly, but I'd be surprised if they don't.
Yeah, I mean, it would fit. All right, let's talk about SRA because you know they're another very significant player, and now they're owned by somebody else.
Yeah, that was really in 2011, the flagship deal in this industry, a $2 billion transaction. Which is one of the largest that's occurred, certainly in the last handful of years. Having that company be a private public company from 2002 through 2011, going through a substantial growth curve during that period of time, and then having a private equity group come in and buy that company and take them private. Again, you know, this is a sign of the times. That difficult growth environment is one that is easier to deal with as a private company than it is as a public company. And just given the size of that, the reputation and the quality of the business of SRA, that was clearly the headline transaction for this industry in 2011.
But give us a little background on Providence, because you know a fair amount about them, too.
Yeah, and Providence, this is not their first time in the space. They have one of their advisors is a former senior SRA executive. They had worked with, they own Altegrity, which is the business under which USIS sits. And so this is not the first time that they got into the space, and they certainly had the very strong advisors to help them understand what they were doing, and ultimately it will be very interesting to watch over the course of the next 3, 4, 5 years, because when a private equity group comes in, that's not the last that we're going to hear from them. There's typically another transaction to follow, whether they go public again at some point in the future as the markets recover, or ultimately get sold off to a larger strategic buyer. Something will happen over the course of the next 4 or 5 years.
Cool. We'll talk about another deal or two when we come back. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on WFED Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after this.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
Several of the government's most recognizable websites are moving to the cloud. The General Services Administration has signed a deal to transition sites including USA.gov and Data.gov to a privately hosted cloud platform. GSA made the award under its new blanket purchase agreement for cloud infrastructure as a service. It's the second such major deal under that BPA. Homeland Security used the vehicle to move several of its public websites to the cloud last summer.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to gdit.com to learn more. That's gdit.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
It is one of our most sophisticated drones, and Iran claims that it was hijacked using a flaw in the GPS guidance system. They got the drone to think that it was in Afghanistan when it was actually still in Iran, and so the drone landed at its home base, thinking it was home base, right, but actually it was in Iran.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, Caps fans, on the move but need your Caps info? Then download the official Caps mobile app to your Android, iPhone, or BlackBerry. With the Caps mobile app, you can follow the game with real-time scores and stats and access news, photos, podcasts, videos, and Twitter feeds anytime, anywhere. To download, text Caps app to 43803 or log on to WashingtonCaps.com. Stay Caps connected with Caps Mobile.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Experience GW basketball in one of DC's best college venues, the Colonials Club. As a member of the Colonials Club, you will enjoy a game day atmosphere that is unmatched in Washington area college basketball. Your philanthropic donation and loyal support for GW Athletics provides countless opportunities to our student athletes in pursuit of both their academic and athletic goals. Call 202-994-7325 to join the Colonials Club today and help raise high the Buff and Blue.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with over 300 delegates and key speakers such as Lieutenant General Daryl D. Jones, Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel and Services, U.S. Air Force, Honorable Thomas R. Lamont, Assistant Secretary of the Army, Manpower and Reserve Affairs, and Honorable Juan M. Garcia, Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Manpower and Reserve Affairs. This year's event will be held on March 12th through the 15th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. For more info, visit hcmdusa.com. Mention code FNR for a 25% discount.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Kevin DeSanto, who's the managing director of Kipps DeSanto. You can find them at KIPPSDESANTO, kippsdesanto.com. So we're talking about a couple of deals that that were really significantly on the radar last year. Let's talk about Dynamics Research.
Dynamics Research acquired a company called High Performance Technology, Inc. This past summer, HPTI. HPTI was a client of ours, and we obviously were very excited about that transaction, but also one that really is very significant in the marketplace. The transaction was a $143 million purchase price for a company that was doing roughly $100 million a year in revenue. And a big acquisition for DRC, the largest in their history, and ultimately
they hadn't done a tremendous number of acquisitions before, is that right?
Over the course of the last 10 years or so, they've probably done 6 in total.
Yeah.
And so they've been reasonably active, but certainly not a company that's been one of the more active. And that a lot of that has to do with their size. I mean, it's a company that's less than $500 million a year in revenue.
Right.
And ultimately was looking for a way to improve and increase their competitive positioning. And HPTI was a really, really strong company. Based out in Reston, they really were doing some very innovative things, driving IT infrastructure, doing a lot with software development, and fundamentally had a very, very significant focus on employee culture and morale and building careers for their employees versus just sticking them in roles. And one of the things that we found in talking to potential buyers about that business was that folks really valued the quality of the culture and the quality of the infrastructure because it allowed them to really project a sustained growth platform given how close people were tied and how significant an organization that was in terms of people's employment. So that was one of the we characterize that as kind of a middle market type of transaction given the size that was one of the again headline transactions in the space last year.
Yeah, but it brings up a really important point: the employee culture. They're usually among the main assets, if not the main assets, are the employees, the people who own the relationships with the clients, the people who bring in the bids and the wins. And not all acquiring companies understand the value the same way.
Well, I always kind of take a step back, and I believe that all buyers understand the value in the same way. What we don't see is a consistent approach to the integration of businesses after the transaction is completed. Mm-hmm. And that ends up being one of the challenges for anybody because, Mark, as you said, this is a people business. And you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, anytime there's change, there's risk to that employment population. And you ultimately want to have a buyer and to have an integration plan that will allow for as few hiccups as possible. Some of that's not in our, not in a buyer's control. Some of that is not in a seller's control. And at the end of the day, it's really about doing the right things and trying to maintain the identity of those folks, whether they really identify with the mission of their customers or they identify with the culture of the company, trying to do things that are going to enhance and maintain the things that are important to them is one of the things that we recommend highly in the context of being a buyer and trying to make sure that the dollars you're spending on those transactions are good dollars that have significant return over the long term.
Cool. All right, we've talked about a couple of the headline gigs, and there's you know 90 some other transactions that occurred. So what types of deals are larger companies buying smaller companies for a very specific skill set? What's the trend here?
Well, so let's look at the 90 or so deals that were done in 2011 and even incorporate the roughly 100 that were done in 2010. About 35% of those transactions were companies that focused on cybersecurity or intelligence community end customers. So a good solid one-third of the marketplace is in that IC, cyber, fiber side of the equation. That's a significant trend that we're seeing now. Everybody is looking to try to latch on to the unclassified and classified portions of the budget that are addressing the security threat that's out there. That's obviously, you know, a hot topic for everybody at this point.
Let's touch on that for a second. How impactful, if that's a word, was it when DOD announced the fifth area of warfare?
It's significant in the signaling. It's significant from a policy standpoint. And ultimately, it will have an impact on the allocation of budget dollars. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, this is a problem that we can't run from, irrespective of whether it's a fifth domain. This is a major national security issue.
It's been with it since they strung that 15 feet of cable.
That's right. It's a major national security issue. It's a major issue for the industrial complex. And it's something that has to be addressed, irrespective of whether it is that fifth domain. But that's certainly a good sign that people are paying attention to it as the problem that it really is.
Thank God. Yes.
And so, you know, kind of taking the question earlier a step further, about a little more than a third of those deals being in that cybersecurity and intelligence arena. And then when you look at the balance of that pie, about 25% of it is companies that are doing work for civilian government agencies. And the big push there is health and health IT. And so we've seen companies like General Dynamics and Lockheed Martin make acquisitions recently of health IT companies. That's another area that we're seeing a lot of focus, given federal healthcare reform, the things that are happening in the commercial sector, the need for electronic health records. There's just a tremendous amount of IT work that is ultimately going to be done. And out of that IT work flows many, many different disciplines that have to be incorporated into that process. The next 25% of that pie slice is companies that are more diversified. And that's the part of the pie that we've seen shrinking over the course of the last few years. Diversification as an entrepreneur is a good thing. It helps you balance the risk and feel comfortable and confident that one customer or one contract is not ultimately going to change the direction or the value of your company. But in this market, having diversification is something that can ultimately be a challenge, because that leads to less touch or less depth inside of a customer account. Capability, and therefore, when you're looking at the constrained budget environment, challenges across multiple customers. So we're talking to folks about becoming more focused, deeper with their either customer relationships or with their capabilities, and ultimately, having an identity, as doing something well or doing things well for somebody specific that's in those headline budget areas or headline trend areas.
Yeah, don't tell me you're a 10-person systems integrator. Tell me what you do.
That's right. And then the last piece of the puzzle is DOD, which represents roughly 15-20% of the pie when you add all that up. Mm-hmm. And just the DOD environment has been in a major flux, obviously, with the situation in Iraq and Afghanistan and what companies were able to do in the mid-2000s and what they're going to be able to do on a go-forward basis is different. And so that market's been a little bit challenged. But certainly there are opportunities there for folks who are doing things like C4ISR or unmanned systems. Mm-hmm. There's just a great deal of opportunity in that space, despite that being one of the lower volume deal areas.
Okay. Let's go back to the cyber / intel, one third of the deal. So we're talking roughly 30 plus or minus deals. How big were the companies? And let's go back to that differentiating factor. Were they purchased because they really own some intellectual real estate that's hot?
It's a combination of intellectual property or solutions. So when you talk about the cybersecurity side of things, a lot of times it's a technology. And whether that's a firewall or whether that's a DPEC, an inspection tool, or there's some other tool that helps on the offensive or defensive side of that equation, mm-hmm. There's a lot of solutions that are being acquired in this marketplace. But there's also a services business. And one of the challenges that you have on the cybersecurity side is that not all services are cyber, although it'd be hard-pressed to not believe that, given the marketing materials that we see on the street on a daily basis. But at the end of the day, things like information assurance and other capabilities are good. They're helping a customer solve a problem. But then there's the real cybersecurity, the tools that are being applied, the solutions that are allowing for a protected network, a hardened infrastructure that put the customers in a position to operate with the confidence that there's going to be as few breaches as possible.
Right. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on WFED, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. When we come back, we're going to delve a little bit into what companies need to do to position themselves for mergers and acquisition. Back after this.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud,
dude, check out my new Pioneer DEH44 car stereo with built-in HD radio technology and new HD2 HD3 channels.
HD2 HD3 channels?
Get with it, man. HD2 HD3 channels are all these new free digital radio channels.
How do I listen to them?
With the new Pioneer DEH44 HD radio receiver. It's only $120 at Walmart.
Walmart? That's cool.
Yeah, just go to HDradio.com and check out the station guide. They're adding new channels all the time.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I join the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Thursday, February 2nd at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will focus on critical issues facing government and industry leaders in securing cyberspace. The panel includes government leaders from DHS, U.S. Cyber Command, and OSD. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Thursday, February 2nd at 12 noon right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by Lockheed Martin and McAfee.
Welcome to today's lottery draw. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Stopping blood flow from a wound can, of course, mean the difference between life and death. So a new sponge has been engineered to speed clotting. Even a neck wound that obviously can't take a tourniquet could be quickly sealed using the sponge, says Paula Hammond, a chemical engineer at MIT.
We can actually coat every pore of that sponge and therefore really load it with a large amount of thrombin.
The protein thrombin induces rapid blood clotting, and Hammond devised a way to spray it into the sponge in alternating thin layers with tannic acid, a natural substance found in teas that
interacts with the protein in a way that doesn't remove its activity and preserves it.
Hammond says the active ingredients remain stable in the sponge for at least a few months. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Kevin DeSanto, Managing Director of Kips DeSanto. You can find them at kipsdesanto.com. Kevin, let's talk a little bit about how companies position themselves for the M&A. I mean, the real advice is when you start a company, you start with the end in mind. But in actuality, that doesn't happen that often.
Very rarely happens, actually. I think it's a psychological barrier to assume success when you're an entrepreneur and you've got the paranoid and neurotic behavior that oftentimes leads to being successful. You know, when we look at what is required to position for a sale, there's really two buckets that you think about. One is the strategic side of things, and that leads down the path of the typical guidance and advice that you would hear of going after and winning full and open contracts that clearly will convey to a buyer. That leads to going after and winning positions on contract vehicles that provide for a form of differentiation, having access to a DHS Eagle contract, having access to an Encore 2 contract, having access to an ESD contract at CMS in Baltimore. Those are things that really drive differentiation for smaller organizations and build value and increase the attention that folks are going to pay to them. So, you know, we kind of come back to things like having consistent growth rates, having a strong business development pipeline and infrastructure, generally trying to chase as much prime work as possible, again, being full and open. Those are, you know, some of the hot button issues that folks think about in the context of an M&A transaction. On the more kind of structural side of that commentary, it's the little things like you know, having good, clean corporate records and documentation.
Is your back office that important?
Your back office is fundamentally important. One of the things that you're trying to do in the context of a sale of a company is create the confidence in the buyer that they're going to be willing to pay as much as they can because they view the risk profile as being very limited. And so that back office, that infrastructure, those processes, the documentation, the order that you keep, those things all really do affect the way people think of a business. It impacts the credibility. It impacts what they view as sustainable in the context of what the business is going to look like on a go-forward basis. And frankly, it's one of the challenges that a lot of small companies have is being able to survive in a larger organization where there are more, there is more of a bureaucracy. There is more of a process that you have to keep up with and run your business at the same time. So, you know, proving that you can do that independently is something that does contribute to the credibility.
Cool. Now, in the last segment, you touched on something that I want to take as part of this. When companies are positioning themselves for winning business or being acquired, How far does differentiation have to go, and how do they, where and how do they enunciate it?
Well, it's you know, from my vantage point, it's something that every company should be thinking about every day. You know, you should never walk into a customer, you should never walk into a bid without having thought fully through that differentiation. How are you going to convince somebody that you're the right person for the job? This is a very competitive marketplace. There's lots of companies that are in the, you know, $20 to $150 million revenue size range. They're all very capable. They have very good, strong relationships. So what's the secret sauce? There's always something that you're looking for that allows you to envision that success on a go-forward basis. And again, as a buyer, you're not buying the past, you're buying the future. And so as a seller, you need to be thinking about what ultimately will be able to put you in a position where the potential buyers are going to view you as the differentiated asset that they need to spend their time and money on. And you know, thinking about that in the context of marketing, thinking about that in the context of the quality of your employees and your management team, and ultimately the way that you run the business on a day-to-day basis are, again, fundamental to that value creation process.
How active are you on LinkedIn?
Fairly active. You know, try to keep touch with folks that that I see on a regular basis in the marketplace or new folks that I meet. It's helpful for me to get a sense as to who's talking to who. Mm-hmm. And when you think about this market in particular, it seems like we're only one degree of separation from practically every business person in this community. But frankly, this is a community that's evolving into other areas of the country as well. And so, you know, with the evolution of technology and solutions, you know, we see a lot more folks coming into the DC market from the West Coast, Silicon Valley, places like that. So it's become a very useful tool for me from a business standpoint.
The reason I ask is that from my studying of this, and I'm coaching a lot of people and a lot of companies on this right now, there seems to be a lack of understanding that you can use LinkedIn to position your company as a thought leader, subject matter expert, but there has to be a consistency in the message about what your company does throughout all the employee profiles. And I'm not seeing that as regular. I'm seeing it with my clients because I'm smacking them around about it. But I'm not seeing it from a lot of other companies that really own, you know, some cool technical expertise.
I'll say this, not knowing how you react to it. It's the low-hanging fruit. And when you think about how easy it is to create that profile, how easy it is to connect to the right people and have the right people in those forums, you know, everybody should be doing it. We as a company are working hard on a overall social media campaign and making sure that we're providing good inputs and good information to folks so that even when we're not talking to them, that they can have a sense as to what's going on in the market and the things that are important so that they can make decisions in board meetings or staff meetings that ultimately help them drive to what is valuable in today's market. And with the changes that are occurring and the issues that we're facing, this is the time to be paying attention to those kind of things. So certainly believe in that message, Mark.
Well, it's cheap. Yeah, I mean, you know, small companies don't have a lot of money.
That's right.
And it does. You know, you can join LinkedIn for free. And if you legitimately own that real estate, you can claim it and you can get people that you've worked with to endorse that position.
Absolutely.
And when people are researching now, one of the first places they go, you know, you go to Google, you type in a technology, you'll find LinkedIn profiles in the answers.
Yeah. Well, and it comes down to websites as well. One of the things that you'll notice in the government contracting space is that the websites generally say the same thing over and over again. And that's not
systems integrated.
Yeah, and that's not to be disparaging, but it's just what these companies do, but there are ways to really tell the message and to tell it in a way that it may get to a customer, but probably most importantly gets to the employees or potential employees of the business. Mm-hmm. And this is a market where recruiting is the engine of growth. And so when you take a step back and you think about where you focus as a business, growth is what drives value. And to be a growth company, you've got to invest heavily on the business development side and heavily on the recruiting side. And that is, whether it's the website or LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever the case might be, there's great opportunity in there. And we know a lot of recruiters, we know a lot of folks are focusing on those kind of things. But from a company positioning and differentiation standpoint, there's certainly some value there.
Cool. Let's take our break now and come back and we'll wrap up. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, WFED 1500 AM. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little more about all aspects of merger and acquisition in the government market.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, I've been learning about HD radio technology at HDradio.com, and I'd like to see what kind of HD radio receivers are available.
Easy answer. Here at Best Buy, we sell all kinds of HD radio receivers. Home, portables, car, boom boxes with iPod docking.
Cool. Are they expensive?
Nope. This Insignia portable HD radio player is only $49.99, and there's no subscription to listen to HD radio stations.
Sweet. Let's get started.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
In the beloved fairy tale, Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented.
Platform as a service is a critical layer in the cloud stack. Infrastructure as a service was only the first step towards the cloud. The platform enables agencies to develop, deploy, and use applications in more agile ways. It allows them to accelerate their time to value for mission applications and continue the savings journeys that they've already begun with their journey to infrastructure as a service in this difficult, constraining budget environment.
To hear the Federal IT Challenge in its entirety and learn more about the journey to cloud computing, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
What is the strategic vision for today's U.S. Air Force? How is the Air Force managing in an era of fiscal constraint? What is the Air Force doing to improve its operations and become more efficient and agile? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Aaron Connaughton, Undersecretary of the U.S. Air Force, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
You download the free applications for your iPhone or iPad or Android smartphone, and then you go to their network, and then it knows all of the infrared codes for these things, and it's got the programming for 500 models. And then once you download the specific details for the model of the equipment that you have, this remote control will control everything.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Agencies must move three IT systems to the cloud by mid-2012. Email and workplace collaboration applications are among the most popular early choices, with a number of agencies already successfully moving to web-based email. Which agencies are leading the way? What can other federal employees learn from their experience? Tune in to Federal News Radio Tuesday, January 31st at noon to hear answers to these questions and learn how agencies are taking advantage of the cloud. January 31st, noon, on Federal News Radio, sponsored by Google.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Kevin DeSanto, who is the managing director of Kips DeSanto. I didn't mention this earlier, but go to kipsdesanto.com, click on the blog. There's a lot of really, really good information here, and they spend a fair amount. I mean, these guys own some intellectual capital in this area, boys and girls. So go to the blog, read this stuff, especially if you are a C-level at a small or mid-sized company and you're beginning to think about that transitional exercise of being acquired. So to that end, Kevin, let's talk about the C-levels and the types of advice they not simply need for the selling process, but the growing process.
It often comes up in the context of a board of advisors. And one of the things that you'll see is that a lot of folks have assembled a board of advisors, but very few of them actually get meaningful value out of that group of folks. And so what we focus on and the guidance that we provide is to help executives understand what they're trying to accomplish and how to most effectively use these folks. Having quarterly meetings is always a good thing, but the reality is that they should be a part of the day-to-day thinking and should be somebody that you can reach out to and get connected to very quickly. So, you know, bringing in a four-star general, a retired four-star general that is traveling the world on different business topics that you might see once or twice a year may look good on the website, but the reality is that that does not do much for you in the context of building your business. Folks that can be helpful are more tactical, more strategic, folks that are really subject matter experts in areas of technology or have a unique relationship with a customer set. Ultimately, having a good accounting firm, a good law firm, having the right PR and marketing folks aligned with you, having the right bank that is your resource for capital to grow your business, having a relationship with an investment banker that can keep you up to speed on the movements in the marketplace. All of those folks are critical to have as part of the team that you're relying on to build value in that business. And so, you know, as you take a step back from that, it may not be your closest friends. It may not be the people who helped you get from zero to $10 million. It's going to be an evolution of those relationships and really kind of entrusting them with the ability to be objective and to give you good advice that's ultimately going to help you build value in your business.
Well, you don't want your best friends anyway, because they're probably going to endorse you whether or not it's a good decision or not. Most good friends do not try to impede what you perceive to be your progress, even if that goes against their better instincts. So how do you go about finding the right advisors? There's, you know, in your instance, investment banking, mergers and acquisition is what you do. You do it day in, day out. You've done it for good Lord knows how many years, and you're really good, but you've focused on a particular strata, government technology in a particular size. But how do companies find you? How do you find the companies? If they want legal advice, you know, walk down K Street, shake a stick, and you'll have 50 lawyers, you know, lining up to talk to you.
It's not an easy process. Again, the main goal is folks that are going to be completely objective and are going to tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? I mean, one of the things that I always talk about with our team
is... But I get invited to leave.
you learn the most from, you know, mistakes that you make or mistakes that others make. And so you really want to have folks that can come in and have been through and experienced these kind of things. And so, you know, think about the role that they played. Think about what their background and capability is and make sure that it applies to what you are. Make sure that it's not just a bright, shiny object in terms of, you know, a senior person from a certain organization. It has to be somebody who understands the fabric of that organization or that subject matter and can ultimately, you know, be a true resource where you can find information that you can't otherwise get.
Okay, cool. Now let's see if we can enumerate the multiple types of people they might need. Why would they need a banker?
Well, from an investment banker standpoint, somebody that understands what what is valuable in the current market and has a sense as to where that market is moving. So the investment banker looks at and sees many, many companies on a daily basis and sees the transactions that are occurring and has an understanding as to why they are occurring. So that information can be very helpful. When you think about bidding for a piece of work, it may not be a valuable piece of work in the context of a sale transaction. If you're 10 years from selling your company, that may not matter. But if you're 12 months from selling your company, that could matter. So having that perspective is helpful. When you think about it from a commercial banker standpoint, having a long-term relationship or a deep relationship with a capital-providing entity is important to your growth plans.
Right, but not all banks do the factoring type of lending.
That's right. And whether or not factoring is the right option for a small company is something that should be debated. It can be an expensive form of capital, can be very useful in specific circumstances, but a more longer-term approach may be more appealing and be less expensive in that context. And so you really want to take a step back and try to find a source. Most of the banks have a full scope of products and services that they offer, and you can generally get what you need out of them. But a lot of it comes down to, especially in this market with the challenges that we've had over the last 4 or 5 years, it comes down to the relationship. It comes down to the confidence. It comes down to the consistency of your business, the sustainability on a go-forward basis, and the quality of the organization. These are folks that are trying to invest in situations that have as little risk as possible. So ultimately, the quality of that business and the quality of those relationships is significant.
Okay. How do they pick, and why do they need legal advice?
Legal advice runs the gamut. It starts with from the very get-go with the incorporation of the business. Thinking about the appropriate structure, whether it's an LLC or an S corp or a C corporation. Thinking about how you're going to document the shareholder agreements and the partnership agreements. Thinking about how you're going to document the employee incentives that you're going to offer, whether those are stock options or stock appreciation rights or some other form of synthetic equity that oftentimes is a part of the capitalization of a company. And then from there it extends on. Dealing with issues from an employee or ERISA standpoint, dealing with government contracting issues. Mark, as you well know, protests are up significantly in this environment, and having good government contracts counsel who can be an advisor as to what the right approach is in those types of situations, whether you're on the offensive or the defensive side of that. Mm-hmm. And then fundamentally in the context of a transaction, whether it's raising equity or doing a bank deal or selling to a strategic buyer, you need a good transaction lawyer who's going to be able to sit on the other side of the table, know the market norms, and fundamentally know and be able to educate you on the risks that you need to take to get the deal done, and then be able to work those into a very market-based framework so that you're not taking inordinate risk because of having somebody who's never done an M&A transaction before.
Okay. Accounting.
Accounting, again, I talked about the credibility factor earlier in the hour, and that, just having a clean audit, having folks that understand your business and your industry and making sure that they are staying on top of the trends and the changes from a regulatory standpoint. And then oftentimes with accounting comes tax, and that ends up being a very big part of all of the transactions that we do, trying to find the most tax-efficient structure, ultimately trying to find, make sure that we're not tripping up around the complex regulations that exist with respect to tax. And I want to add one more to this, which is something that's not necessarily company specific, but is really specific to shareholders in private companies. You want to work on and get your tax and estate planning done really as soon as possible. There's great ways to extract value through very, very sophisticated estate planning. And then once you've gotten your estate plan in place, having a partner on the wealth management side that can provide for a relationship that you trust, who's going to manage your money for the long term. You know, when you have these big liquidity events, and it's a life-changing situation, and you want to have folks that you can trust. So finding those folks before you get into that life-changing situation is something that we highly recommend.
Cool. Kevin, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Really appreciate it.
My guest today has been Kevin DeSanto, Managing Director of Kips DeSanto. KipsDeSanto.com. Click on that blog. Read that blog. Thanks for listening to AmTower Off Center on WFED Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is not my day job. Keep up with me on LinkedIn and take a look at my blog at federaldirect.net. Just click on the AmTower blog. Last week, I hosted my first LinkedIn Black Belt workshop. If you are not maximizing the value of this extraordinary tool, give me a shout. And remember, you've not been everywhere until you've been off center with AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.